purpose of money. The second day of the hiking trip under the leadership of the great keeper of knowledge was coming to an end. The route of the disciples led to a small temple built in a gorge surrounded by rocky mountains. The stony surface of the soil, mingling with the aromas of fragrant alpine herbs, exuded a unique, primal, damp scent. Majestic landscapes of snowy hills were intermittently replaced by lush green hills. Like giant spirits, they silently accompanied the people on their way to the place of power, where seekers would inevitably find tranquility and awakening of inner harmony. The breathtaking energy permeating the air was inebriating, bringing a special, incomparable kind of pleasure. The travelers were silent. Only occasionally during breaks, they exchanged a couple of phrases or exchanged glances, silently sharing the common joy of following the master into the wondrous place of power. By evening after dinner, they engaged in spiritual practices, which were enhanced by the place they were in. They were far from the outer world, but at the same time, more united with it than ever before. After completing their meditation, the keeper gathered his disciples around the campfire and was ready to listen to the thoughts that had come to them during the long journey.
"My dear master,"
began the shy disciple Eliza,
"today we have traveled a long way, and the fact that we did it in silence helped me a lot. I have come to understand many things and felt closer to God, and the fact that you led the way and we followed you was very symbolic. It once again brought me the feeling that I'm following the truth and I'm in my place."
Eliza's words resonated in the hearts of the other disciples, and they nodded with gratitude, in agreement. But the insight of the keeper of knowledge could not ignore the hint of sadness in the words of the disciple.
"What troubling thought came to you, Eliza? I see that something is preventing you from fully immersing yourself in the elevated state."
"Yes, Master. There is one terrible thought that came to me today when I was contemplating our school. One of my disciples confessed to me a few days ago. She thinks that our school serves money, not God. Her misconceptions have led her to now feel naive and foolish, as if she were praying to the devil. She is distressed that our prayers for money, beauty, health, and eternal youth are unacceptable in the ordinary faith. Her words touched me, and now I am also thinking about it."
The Great One beamed with a broad smile. There was so much light and warmth in it that Eliza instantly realized how many times the Master had to dispel the fog of such misconceptions in the minds of the disciples. She felt relieved.
"Such thoughts arise from ignorance or incorrect interpretation of knowledge,"
the keeper explained gently.
"If you carefully examine the shamanic map, you can understand what we ask from Ulgen, the god of the future. It is necessary to explain to the disciples that requests to the devil, and in the shamanic tradition, he is embodied by the god of the past, Erlich, have a different nature, and different emotions are put into such prayers. For example, if we were to ask for the world to be divided, for military actions to take place, for destruction, calamity, or misfortune to occur, then these requests would be addressed to Erlich, that is, to the god of destruction. But if we ask for beauty, health, wealth, it means we are turning to Ulgen, who gives us all this."
With these words, the teacher lowered his tone and continued warmly.
"At the same time, we use benevolent light energy, envisioning pure images, health and strength, beauty and love, wealth. Only light energy can stem from these prayers. That disciple needs to study the shamanic map and the knowledge of shamanic gods."
Rife, sitting next to Eliza, decided to support the girl. He offered her a warm blanket, then took up the conversation.
"I also once heard thoughts from one of the disciples that we sold our souls to the devil."
At these words, everyone laughed. Rife deliberately put on a sinister expression and made a frightening gesture.
"We are evil witches and sorcerers and must be burned at the stake. That's why we listen to music with strange sounds. perform rituals, wear amulets made of dead animals, and pray to the spirit of wealth, Zion Zayachi.
There was irony in Rafe's words, but the last phrase he uttered with a slight sadness, recalling his conversation with an extremely paranoid disciple. He glanced at the sage, seeking understanding and feeling awkward for the words of the naive ignorant he voiced.
"We honor ancient traditions,"
said the Great One with respect in his voice.
"Shamans have worn amulets for millennia, made from wolf fangs, bear claws, and other things. Shamanic ceremonies were conducted long before our appearance here, and we cannot violate them. This is our tribute to ancient knowledge."
The disciple Victoria handed the keeper a cup of hot tea, made from a blend of fragrant herbs. The master took a sip, and it was evident that he was very pleased with the enchanting taste of thyme and lucestrife. After a while, the Great One added with surprise,
"And why don't they like the music? If they heard Tibetan chants, they would faint."
The disciples laughed. The sage had often shown them audio and video recordings of Tibetan ceremonies at seminars, accompanied by throat singing. Without the explanations of the Keeper of Knowledge, they could not understand anything of these ceremonies, so they could not derive any benefit from them. In the relaxed atmosphere that had developed, Eliza relaxed and felt unconditional trust in the school and all the forms of knowledge transmission that the master tirelessly introduced. She continued the discussion of the difficult topic.
"Master, I explained to the disciples that the devil is simply the god of destruction. There is a god of creation, Ulgin, so there must be a god of destruction. Everything should be in balance, right?"
"Of course, Eliza. If there were no destruction, then the world would be overrun with things and people. With the passage of time and the development of new technologies, humanity creates more and more. Millions of different items are produced every day, and millions of people are born. Can you imagine a world where no one dies, nothing disappears, nothing collapses, and everything remains forever? How many galaxies would then be filled with people? No, such a thing is impossible."
The image of such a boring life vividly presented itself to everyone, evoking different feelings among the disciples. Someone breathed a sigh of relief, rejoicing that such an outcome would never come, while someone shuddered, vividly imagining the picture painted by the Keeper. Constantine, a tall, slender man with a thin beard, decided to vocalize a possible solution to such a situation.
"Humanity in such conditions would surely quickly begin to pray to Erlik."
At that moment, Constantine embodied the character from that fantastic universe and pleaded in a voice that was not his own.
"Erlik, destructive power! Take us away from here, crush our bodies, free our souls. We have no more strength to live in such confinement. There is not enough air for all of us. Take our belongings and leave only the essentials."
The short comedic sketch was met with applause and smiles. Renat, sitting nearby, couldn't resist teasing his friend. Patting him on the shoulder, he remarked,
"I'm sure Erlik would take you away first for such acting prowess."
Everyone laughed, but quickly returned to the serious topic when the master resumed speaking.
"Erlik or Shiva, this is the correct understanding of the god of destruction. But the devil is given an incorrect meaning. Only evil. But if the devil only did evil, why would God create him?"
The disciples fell into thought. None of them had yet considered this perspective, but the Keeper of Knowledge always had irrefutable arguments, shifting the assembly point and revealing the question from an unexpected angle. He continued,
"The God of Eternity. Tengri and the goddess of the present Umai had two sons born, Erlik, the god of the past, and Ulgin, the god of the future. Would God have allowed the birth of the devil if he had known in advance that he would only create evil? Or perhaps he did not know? Then it could be said that God made a mistake and did not see that the devil would create evil, so he allowed his birth."
The master made an accentuated pause, so that the disciples could grasp the meaning of his words. A storm of complex emotions engulfed the listeners. To each of them, the truth was obvious. The Almighty does not make mistakes. This is the foundation of the world. The all-seeing and all-knowing is not questioned in his deeds, and there is a purpose for everything created by God. Everyone eagerly awaited for the sage to continue his allegory and reveal the true purpose of the devil.
If God endowed the devil with free will, and the devil used it and stopped obeying him, does that mean that God is not all-powerful and evil can resist him? Not at all.
The keeper answered for everyone.
But people can think like that. Everyone has known about the existence of the devil for at least 10,000 years. So why does God allow the devil to act? Why doesn't he stop his mischief? Maybe he's in on it together with him. These questions cast doubt on the almighty power of God and sow seeds of misunderstanding in the minds of believers. But in Hinduism or shamanism, everything is harmonious. It is necessary to explain this to the disciples. If there is creation, there must be destruction, so that life continues, events happen, and balance is maintained. This is what we learn.
Medina raised her hand. The dark-eyed beauty rarely asked questions to the master, despite having many. She enjoyed listening to other group members, and when the master responded to them, she found in his words everything she herself intended to ask about. But this time the girl decided to clarify important knowledge for herself, without waiting for others.
"Great one,"
Medina began.
"Tell me, do I understand correctly that shamanism and Hinduism, unlike other religious currents, teach us to achieve harmony in all existence on the path to enlightenment? Do they teach to correctly understand the god of destruction? After all, Ulgen and Erlik both lead us to spiritual development, just each uses their own methods. Ulgen gives us what we ask for, and we accept it. When we ask for a lot and receive it, we still come to the thought that all these material goods are not really necessary for us. We asked for a lot of money. Ulgen gave it to us. But when there's too much of it, it doesn't bring happiness. On the contrary, it brings only worries and fears. Then we begin to think and seek spiritual happiness. And Erlik, on the other hand, takes away our blessings to teach. He takes one, then another, then a third, and at first we grieve about it. But then we start to notice how the soul cleanses itself without these blessings. If Erlik didn't exist, and only Ulgen directed us, then we wouldn't know the value of experiencing loss and wouldn't be able to derive important lessons from it and develop."
"Everything is correct, Medina."
The sage praised the thoughtful speech of the disciple.
"And in shamanism and Hinduism, there is a correct understanding of the god of destruction. But in Christianity, a very negative quality is assigned to him. Therefore, his purpose is distorted, and many people begin to associate the devil only with evil, like Eliza's disciple, for example."
The keeper looked compassionately at Eliza, letting her know that all of this time, he was still addressing her concerns. The girl felt a strong wave of support and love. She eagerly listened to every word, aiming to convey this light into the minds of her disciples. She also wished to confidently and clearly explain the wise truth to be a conductor of the knowledge bestowed by the Great One. But for this, she still had much to learn.
"Thus this disciple has confusion in her mind,"
the sage continued.
"All her life she has been taught that the devil is pure evil, and it would be better if he did not exist. But then she must ask herself why God allowed all this and tolerates the presence of the devil. To understand everything, your disciple needs to form the right attitude toward the devil, toward Erlik, to study shamanism and Hinduism more. As for amulets..."
The keeper of knowledge again savored the taste of his herbal drink, and after a moment of relishing it, continued his thought.
"She's confused here, too. She thinks that amulets are scary but many people wear a consecrated cross even now. It's also an amulet. It says, save and protect on it. The difference lies only in the meaning attributed to it and in the traditional materials used for making it. Christians have silver, wooden, or golden crosses, while shamans have wolf claws or falcon feathers. But both are amulets. Amulets were everywhere in the ancient world. People always tried to make it so that they were influenced by benevolent powers, which were infused into these magical items. People carried them closely, and this power filled them, helped them. It's good. It's normal. At least as a reminder that there are higher powers, bright spirits. We wear amulets so that we can turn to them more quickly.
Thank you, Keeper,
Eliza replied with feeling.
My soul rejoices at your explanations. I will think more often in this way and explain it to the disciples.
The girl visibly brightened up and straightened up. The oppressive thought that weighed like a stone on her heart ceased to exist. Eliza felt lightness and looked around. The high mountains and the aroma of the fragrant decoction from the hiking cup filled her with that pure, elevated feeling she had been striving for all day.
Here it is!
Flashed through her mind, and she glanced at the sage with gratitude. Meanwhile, he was already engaged in another dialogue.
Tell me, Great One, when they talk about the struggle between dark and light powers, do they mean the struggle between Erlik and Ulgin?
Ilan asked. He was a mature man in his 40s, with graying hair and a very penetrating gaze. His hands were adorned with several bracelets made of beautiful gems.
Yes, dark powers attack,
the master explained.
Let's say, larvae. They attach themselves to a person, drink his energy, take away positivity and the will to live, provoke negative emotions. Good spirits immediately counteract them, trying to protect the person from them, saying, do not experience negative emotions. Experience elevated feelings instead. Be in elevated states. Such a struggle is going on. The same struggle must go on inside a person. He must not be a passive puppet in the hands of spirits. He must be in this struggle himself. He must fight with negative emotions, try to experience elevated feelings. There is always a choice. One can destroy oneself with negative emotions, depressed states, harmful habits, and laziness. Or one can start creating, loving, helping, becoming an angel.
And how then is balance achieved?
Ilan continued to delve into the matter.
After all, Ulgin creates and Erlik destroys. It turns out the harmony of their battle lies in the fact that Erlik must take away as much as Ulgin produces. Is this what is metaphorically called a battle?
Exactly. But it is better to call it not a battle, but an interaction of powers. And the understanding of this interaction is precisely what human education consists of. We are not here just to fall apart and do nothing. If we imagine that a person is just always in a state of rest and relaxation, then what is the point of his being on Earth? It is much better to be on a subtle level. Physical body and other external circumstances will not interfere then. Here it is precisely development that is happening, and development is impossible without difficulties. That's why some difficulties are given to a person. God gave something, took something. But a person must use these difficulties correctly, like gym equipment in a gym. He begins to develop, grow, and then becomes smart. And if there's nothing to train on, how can he become smart?
So, Master, is that why God created the physical world?
Ilan clarified.
Exactly.
The sage readily confirmed.
If there was no need for these sufferings, then God would not have created it. But it turns out, without these trials, without suffering, no one can change, become smarter. That's why the physical world had to be created. For this, Erlik and the larvae act, creating suffering. Through them, a person becomes smarter. becomes smarter, of course, if he starts to analyze. If a person reinterprets every sharp corners, observes himself, uses these sufferings for good, then development occurs. And if he doesn't use a sharp corners for growth, then he just suffers for an infinite amount of time until he wants to change and finally starts using sharp corners for this.
Now it's clear,
the disciple replied shortly, tossing a new log into the fire. The sounds of his bracelets mingled with the crackling of the burning wood.
Thank you,
he said with feeling, expressing in a short word of gratitude all his respect and acknowledgement.
Wisest one?
Natalie turned to the Keeper of Knowledge.
How should we explain to the disciples why we pray to Zion Zayachi, the spirit of the underworld? Many are afraid of this and somewhat distrustful.
Zion Zayachi should not be feared. Explain to people that we live in a world of spirits. They are around us. We just cannot see them. But we can feel them if we tune in. Then explanations will not be necessary. The disciples will feel it themselves. They cannot disbelieve their own sensations. We must learn to establish the right contact with them. If it is established, then the spirits help. If there is no contact with them, then there is no need to wait for help when we are in a difficult situation. Therefore, we must establish contact with Zion Zayachi and other spirits, befriend them, make offerings.
On our last trip to Altai, we saw small stone pyramids and tied ribbons there,
recalled one of the disciples.
Yes, yes,
the sage chimed in.
Since ancient times, people have made such symbolic offerings to remind themselves to turn to the spirits. It's just that this gets forgotten, and gradually, people drift away from the spirits. Consequently, they cease to receive their support. That's why people started living poorly. We need to delve deeper into shamanism, then much will become clear.
Natalie looked at the unusually shaped stone she found at noon on the ascent and carried it in her hand for a long time. It was instantly decided to place it tomorrow at the base of such a symbolic little pyramid she would build before leaving the camp. The stone suddenly became especially dear to her, endowed with a special purpose. Tomorrow it will play its important role and will balance in the foundation of the erected pyramid, devoted to the spirits of this unusual place. The disciples' reflections on the planned morning ceremony were interrupted by Helen, who clarified the correct technique of prayer with the master.
Tell me, master, how should one pray to Erlik? Am I correct in thinking that one needs to choose one's words carefully? After all, Erlik, by his very nature, brings destruction, war, but also purification. This is both good and bad. One must be careful in one's formulations. How should one pray so that he assists in establishing harmony in the world?
The main thing is not to ask for harm to others. We turn to the spirits of the underworld to come and free us from wrong thoughts and negative emotions, from negative programs. It is necessary to address Erlik correctly, to perform practices. And since all incorrect programs can be destroyed, we can free ourselves and become reasonable people.
It's clear,
nodded Helen and carefully poured the keeper a new portion of fragrant decoction from the exquisite teapot. She looked at the peak of the mountain opposite. She thought about the destructive power in Erlik.
Even a ready-made avalanche, which seems terrifying, is beautiful in its own way. It symbolizes human helplessness in the face of nature, in the face of God. No one can stop the rebellious snow wave. And if you admire it from afar, then this sight can evoke strong, elevated emotions. That's how one should look at one's losses from afar. What Erlik takes from us will bring elevated feelings someday,
reflected Helen. A light touch on the shoulder brought the disciple back to reality.
Could you pour some tea?
Raif asked with a smile, handing her a metal hiking mug. Helen turned to the keeper in confusion. As for her, the master's tea was like sacred amrita, the drink of the gods. But, meeting the mischievous glance and receiving silent approval, the girl quickly understood.
"With pleasure,"
she replied, and generously poured the guy some herbal tea. Something in their dialogue caught Eliza's attention. After a few seconds of thought, she realized what it was.
"Master,"
Eliza began,
"I just wanted to ask, often, disciples do not understand the law of sacrifice. Many times I have noticed how people are guided by the idea that money is more bad than good. Yet we urge them to donate material resources to good causes. And when it comes to donations, these two things, money and good deeds, don't connect in people's minds. How should we deal with this?"
The great sage lovingly looked at the girl. Her questions were deep and important, and from the tone and trembling in her voice, it was clear that she sincerely wanted to understand everything for the sake of her disciples.
"Of course,"
he replied,
"money is just energy. We can direct it towards creation or destruction. There's no third option. And most importantly, this process happens in our minds constantly. Every day, every hour, every second, we make a choice to create or to destroy. After all, money can be spent wisely, with purpose. We can help grandmothers, buy groceries for the needy, do something else good, invest in spiritual education, development, buy wise books. Then we've used the energy correctly. Don't think of money as good or bad. Think about whether we invest it in good or bad. It's just energy. And like any energy, it must be wisely accepted. Money must be used correctly. If a person is foolish, hasn't been taught to manage money, and it falls into their hands, they may direct it not for good, but to their own harm. For example, they may start consuming alcohol, engage in drug addiction. This will not lead to anything good. Then people look at him and think, money must be evil if it led a person to this. But in reality, it's not money that's evil, but simply that this foolish person doesn't know how to handle it correctly, didn't have any noble goals, objectives."
"But society raised him like that, didn't it? So that as soon as he got money, he immediately ran to alcohol, to drugs, or otherwise spent it unwisely,"
Renat suggested.
"Exactly,"
the master kindly confirmed his thoughts.
"Society didn't make him a normal person. After all, he probably finished school, and he had parents. Why didn't they raise him? Because there's no proper upbringing, neither from parents nor from relatives, nor at school. That's why he grew up to be so foolish. He got money, and he went and spent it unwisely. That's all. Money appeared and became evil for him. It's not about the absence of money, but about him becoming better himself. He needs to be educated."
"It's very difficult to do that right now. It's a shame that sages aren't allowed into schools, universities to teach people,"
lamented the disciple. All those gathered agreed with him and nodded vigorously.
"On the contrary, the government should praise the sages in every way. Look, listen to the sages. They will help you. Explain the truth,"
continued Renat indignantly, gesturing with frustration.
"That's not the case,"
the great keeper replied with regret.
"Sages are not esteemed by the authorities. They are persecuted. This is done so that society remains ignorant, making it easier to govern, to send to military actions. Therefore, society does not make people normal. The government does not care about it. Sages are persecuted in all directions so that they do not teach people."
"So, it's not money that's to be blamed, but the society that doesn't want to make people smart. Is it afraid that people will become smart?"
Eliza asked, as if not believing her own words. The Keeper of Knowledge nodded, responding to the disciple's frustration, and continued.
"And sages are always born and will be born on Earth. Of course, the government should attract them to make people smart. to teach them to manage money. But that doesn't happen, so the government and the society are to be blamed, not money. People don't understand any of this, and therefore say that money is evil. But what do they have to do with it? Who raised a person so that he can only use it for evil? Our society and government. That's the reason for evil.
The Great One spoke unsettling things, but outwardly, he was just as calm. His voice sounded even and confident. He clearly knew something greater, better, and higher, and was far from worldly life and these concerns. At the same time, he was here and very actively participated in enlightening people, leading them to a better life. Meanwhile, his disciples began to develop this complex and vital topic and delved into the debate. Alexander, a short, stocky man with eyes as blue as a mountain lake, vigorously spoke with reflections.
Money is also the simplest energy that can be taken away, he said bitterly. That's why they kill for money, set up. And people don't blame their greed, their selfishness, but say it's the money's fault. I killed him not because I'm a murderer, but because I need money.
The disciple quoted the thoughts of a typical villain.
Maybe they kill and commit other atrocities for money because they simply haven't learned to earn it differently, to earn it honestly.
Gentle Helen joined the conversation, seeking support or development of her thought from the sage.
That's right.
The keeper of knowledge supported her.
Again, society didn't teach them how to earn money or even ask for it. They can't ask for it. They don't know how to earn it. So they go for reckless actions. They weren't taught this in school. They got higher education in the university. But there they don't teach this either. Nowhere are they taught this. Maybe only in some courses. It turns out that they don't teach such basic things. So this villain went to robbery. They can't ask. They can't earn. They got higher education, but they didn't learn how to earn. So they were told, either work for a pittance or arrange a robbery where you can get a pretty sum. That's their choice. Society didn't give them a choice, so that's what happens. It's not the money's fault here, not even greed, but precisely the inability to live. A person doesn't know how to live. Their parents didn't tell them how to do it, and school didn't teach them.
The master gave an interesting example of a girl who grew up successful.
When she was little, her grandmother would say to her, "Do you want candy?" "Yes." "All right, show me how much you want it. Show the power of your desire." She tried hard, somehow showed the power of her desire, and her grandmother gave her a candy. That is, she was rewarded when she made an effort, learned to demonstrate the strength of her desire. The girl absorbed this lesson and now lives wonderfully with this skill, which helps her achieve everything and demonstrate her desires so much that worthy men offer her all the blessings of the world. That's how desire should develop a person. And if they are given for nothing, fed with candies, then a person won't learn to achieve anything in life. Therefore, it's not money's fault or even greed, but specifically the inability to think. And this has been ingrained in people from childhood. That's the root cause of all this. If there were proper upbringing, education, then there would be no crime. A person would either go ask or could already earn, especially after finishing school, where they should have been taught from the first grade how to earn money. In the first grade, they'd go asking. In the second grade, they'd try to sell some newspapers, organize fairs in the third grade, start a business, and thus they would have been taught so that they would leave school as normal people who can do everything. But instead, logarithms, trigonometry, these aren't so important for life. But here, this is where we give people education, teach them how to do everything. Only ignorant people say that this is something from the devil. but it's their ignorance, illiteracy, that is from the devil. This is exactly what thrives in society, supported by the church, government. Everyone supports this order of things. And only sages try to make people smarter and to make their lives better.
There was a pause. The disciples looked at the burning logs and pondered the master's words. They recalled their bitter experience of learning to earn at a time when it was already too late.
If I had known all this back in school and learned to earn money in simple situations, I wouldn't have endured so much humiliation from stupid bosses in my time.
Reif thought, then looked at the sage, realizing with reverence that all his trials might have been necessary to ignite the thirst for knowledge and begin the tireless search for awakening from the sleep of ignorance. He sat opposite the great master, surrounded by rocky mountains, and tomorrow he would follow him on the path to the temple. With these thoughts, the young man smiled and brightened. After a moment of silence, Reif suddenly asked the keeper,
"Tell me, Master, how much should the energy of money be present in spiritual society? Should it be there at all, or should everything be different in spiritual society?"
"Money is normal,"
emphasized the sage once again.
"Before money, there was barter. But barter is not as convenient. People bring whatever they can to the market. Someone brings meat, someone skins, someone wool, and they exchange. Money was made so that people could conveniently exchange goods, sell their labor. It's a convenient form. But the thing is, no one knows how to deal with money, neither earn it, nor ask for it, nor invest it correctly. They aren't taught any of this. That's the problem. It's not the money itself that is the problem, but the fact that people don't know how to deal with it. They don't know how to earn it. They don't know how to ask for it. That's the whole main problem."
Clouds were gathering. The evening was smoothly turning into a moonlit night, and no one else was adding logs to the fire. Natalie, still holding her stone in her hand, which had become precious that evening, asked the last question.
"Master, what if a person doesn't want to donate to seminars and says that they already engage in charity elsewhere? They donate not to the school, but help someone else?"
"It's good if your disciples help someone else, but helping the school is on a higher level. This needs to be conveyed to people. Suppose this person helps the poor, gave them money, they bought food, ate. But if they help the school, then the school will produce books with this money, among other things. If the same poor person read these wise books, maybe he would stop begging for pennies and would already understand, oh, it turns out you can earn money. You can become a spiritual person. You can start developing, going to God. And so they fed the poor. That's also good. The school allocates money for that, too. But if you don't give knowledge to the poor, if you don't educate them, they'll remain poor for the rest of their lives and will spend their whole life with outstretched hands. And they won't become spiritual people, won't come to God. And therefore, in their new life, they will again become some kind of beggar or be born disabled. And they'll live like that. Why would they need all that? But if they received spiritual knowledge, they would already have been enlightened. And then they wouldn't need to be born again. They would become angels, and their existence in suffering would end. So if you donate, do it to the school. And the school is precisely engaged in spreading great knowledge, which helps people. In this case, the help becomes much more significant. Because the greatest help is for a person to receive knowledge and transform from foolish to wise. That's the main help."
"Thank you, Master,"
reassured Natalie, and added,
"I will speak like this. And in general, I will praise our school more often. We do so many good deeds, and it cleanses our lives and heals our souls. I often tell the disciples that our school is the only one that talks about the subtle level. But maybe it's better to give everyone the book Life After Life to read. So that the disciples smoothly prepare for the transition?
Yes, it's useful to give them Life After Life to read so that they absorb the knowledge and start developing. Better for the youth, because in old age, the state becomes so callous that it's difficult to accept new ideas. But for young people, that's just what's needed. They are far from death, yet. Youth is in a more open, seeking state, capable of understanding something, because they haven't cluttered their heads with society's programs so much yet. There's still freedom, and it's doubly good if they don't have a family yet. Then nothing burdens a person. Just develop, improve, grow, and that's all.
The face of the Keeper of Knowledge shone with love at the thought of how many new curious minds and generous hearts the school could still nurture. He signaled the end of the conversation, and the disciples began to prepare for practical lessons.
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.